Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson.
I am also a host. I'm Casey Clapp, looking up words that I cannot pronounce all the time.
Ooh, like the name of this week's tree.
Ooh, yes, and the name of what describes this week's tree. We'll get to it.
Wow,
we'll get
to what it. an intriguing proposition.
You know, there's a, I might have said this before, down in Southern Oregon, there's a resort. It's a tree-sort. And almost every single one of their trees or the resort places is a tree house in a tree.
Okay, sure.
And they name each one some pun has to do with the ends or starts with tree.
Oh, boy.
Like the Magus tree and things like that.
Okay.
It's great. It's a lot of fun. And maybe we'll go down and join the conference here one of these days. But it is...
Invite us.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I think we can just go. We just have to sign up. It's a tree.
No, I
want to
be
conference.
Invited.
All right, I'll invite you.
Sorry, I'm just tweaking our levels here,
yeah,
Casey.
Yeah, feels good. Anyway, Alex, how are you? Good day.
Good day, Casey. You know, I'm just going to lay it out on the table. I'm feeling a little weird today. I got good enough sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Had some strange dreams, but I woke up and was like immediately in like a panicky, like getting things done state.
Oh, yeah.
And so far, nothing has really gone to plan or gone smoothly this morning, but I think that's probably like operator error. Like, because I'm so frantic, I'm fucking everything up.
Ah, okay. I have a proposal then.
What's that?
Let's take three deep breaths.
All right.
Just center ourselves and get ready for this odyssey we're about to do.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. One, two, three.
Breathe
Everybody,
with us at home.
Join in. One more.
Oh, I'm feeling faint.
Oh, that means you're breathing in too fast. Take a second.
And you know this, when you walked in this morning, I was sitting like a kid playing with broken toys, trying to put this desk monitor clamp together.
Yeah. It was. I walked in, and I think you looked at me and said, "End my life," or like something.
Yeah.
Like, what was it? I think. What did you say?
I said, "Please end my life." I was being cheeky,
Just kill me.
It was because I got this fucking monitor clamp, and I opened the instructions and immediately shut them again. I was like, I cannot attempt this right now.
I cannot do this.
And you very kindly and lovingly sat down immediately and tried to start putting it together. And you got through step one of the process.
We
I
did,
think.
Yeah. And now step two revolves around the desk itself.
Yes, which will be for another time.
Like, we've come far enough.
It's going to be. Lily is coming over tonight. We're going to have a nice evening putting my desk monitor clamp together.
Yeah,
how
honestly,
romantic, Casey.
Sweet date, I tell you. Yeah, that sounds perfect.
I told you this. I'll bring her a glass of cold lemonade.
Yeah, exactly.
She'll wipe the sweat from her brow.
And you'll be like, wow, you're doing so good. Thank you. And then go back to doing something else in the kitchen.
Trace a little shape on her shoulder with my finger.
like construction projects, the most romantic thing.
It reminds me of Mad Men. I haven't watched much of Mad Men.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember when he tries to put together the swing set in his backyard?
No, I never really watched that show, though. Oh, I heard it was incredible.
Yeah. Everybody loves it, but it's like, I ain't got time for that. There's seven fucking seasons of that shit. I got plenty of 90 Day Fiancé to catch up on.
Plenty of it. And I have to say, do you know who that actor was? What was his name?
Oh, John Hamm.
John Hamm. Yeah. Honestly, I don't want to watch anything of his after Hercules, where he played the titular character, Hercules.
He played Hercules?
Yeah. Do you remember that show? It was like Xena, Warrior Princess, and then they like had a spinoff of Hercules.
With John Hamm?
I'm 90% sure that
Casey,
John Hamm is Hercules.
I am that other percent sure that you're incorrect, but we need to look it up.
Yeah, okay. Tell me what you find.
Spin-off Hercules, because I can see the actor's face in my head, and it's not John Hamm.
I think it's John Hamm.
It's not John Hamm, Casey.
What?
But it is a guy who looks a little bit like John Hamm. His name is Kevin Sorbo.
No, you're kidding me. Really?
I'm not kidding you, Case. I think, but I'll give you credit. If you'd have a dream about John Hamm, and he doesn't really look like John Hamm, that dream John Hamm looks like Kevin Sorbo.
I can't believe this. I thought my entire life that was John Hamm.
I'm so sorry to burst your bubble. Lucy Lawless is Xena. Man, I love Lucy Lawless. She's so good.
Dude, insane. Yeah.
I need to watch that show.
Yeah, we should get back into it. It's good stuff.
Yeah, you want to watch that now?
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, we'll be back, everyone, right after this.
The entire series. 6 seasons of Xena, then
they
back to the show.
3 weeks of the podcast and just met and watched Xena, Warrior Princess.
They just wanted to catch up on Xena, Warrior Princess.
Obviously, who wouldn't?
Casey, we're not here to talk about Xena.
I know.
Everybody wishes. We should have a Patreon episode where we discuss Xena.
Yeah, pay up, everyone.
Somehow make it tree-related. She uses a wooden shield.
She does, because at the time, that was the best they had.
Yeah.
Some people use wicker shields. What's
really?
That going to stop?
I guess maybe that's one of those things that's like, we're stronger together. Like, lacing of the wicker might be, like, really strong.
I suppose so, yeah. And I think there's a lot of things that go with what you have, you know? Like, if you and I always, like, fight each other, uh-huh. I get really good at defending and fighting you. You get really good at defending and fighting me.
Yeah.
As soon as we fight someone else, we both get destroyed because
totally.
We don't have practice. Or, like, they have a sword made of, I don't know, iron or something.
Like, firearms.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that maybe was it. Like, between those warriors, wicker works great. Better together. It's the strongest thing we got.
Yeah, you have to look at the surrounding, what's going on around the invention. Like the Beatles.
100%. Yeah.
Oh, man. I have a great story. I'm sorry to waste so much time at the top of the show.
It was great.
I have a great story from college.
Okay.
I had a history of some sort of history of music class.
Yeah.
And, you know, the professor on the first day played a short clip of a song.
Oh,
he was like, this is the number one hit from 55 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was like, sugar gum, my baby blue dream.
Yeah.
It's just like this super sweet, like a really, soft little pop song.
Clean cut.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you've told this story.
Oh, okay.
Before.
And then the next song he's like, This is the number one hit from the year after, and it was Shake It Up, Baby Now. And we were like, no wonder they thought they were the devil.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think you've said this exact story because I love this story.
Yeah.
I think it's so fascinating the way that works. Beatles, wild.
Because we listen to music,
giant transition.
The Beatles or Elvis now, and we're this is pretty tame.
Yeah, it's like, ooh.
But at the time, it was like fucking outrageous, like distortion. Holy shit.
God, it's the devil.
Yeah.
There's a, I can bring this to plants if you want.
Let's go for it.
There's a book that I just got done reading. It'll come up in some of our later episodes. It's called What Plants Know.
Oh.
And he discusses some experiments that were done, pseudoscience to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this woman who didn't like like rock music in the 60s.
Okay.
And she would play this music to the plants, and she like would put a bunch of plants out. And this was a big thing back then. We talked one time about The Secret Life of Plants. They did a similar kind of like experiments kind of sidestep science in a kind of the traditional way.
Sure. People playing like classical music to their house plants to see if they grow differently or
exactly.
whatever.
And then she played like I think it was the Rolling Stones or something, mm-hmm. and like the plants died. She was like, "See, this music will rot your brain."
Oh
like,
my god! Yeah.
And the reason people are like this doesn't seem very scientific because the music that helped the plants, she liked. The music that didn't help the plants, apparently, she was like, "This is bad music."
Of course.
So she proved her own theory is brilliant. So apparently, the Beatles, according to some people, will kill your house plants.
Mm.
To other people, they will make them grow.
I wonder if you play it for like British house plants.
It grows
I don't know
better.
What a British houseplant is.
Oh, man. I don't either. But if you know, send us an email, arbitrarypod@gmail.com.
Yeah, send us some seed packets.
Yes, thank you. We'd appreciate that.
They're you know, packets of crisps. They call them packets of packet of crisps.
Oh,
not a,
yeah.
Not a bag of chips, but a packet of seed packets.
Give us a seed packet of seeds. Yeah.
Packet of seeds.
Packet of seeds, please.
Casey, today... we're here to talk about a tree, as we are every week, and this week's tree is something I had to look up several times because I couldn't understand what we were talking about. This is the Cecropia.
Yes.
Also known as Yarumo, also known as the trumpet tree. This is a tree of many names.
It is, and specifically we're going to be talking about the one that's called Cecropia obtusifolia.
Oh my god.
That is this species we're doing.
I'm out the gate going to give a Croson's stump of approval this scientific name.
Why? What is it?
Cecropia
about it?
What was it?
Obtusifolia.
Obtusifolia.
Yeah.
That's just so great. Its flowers are obtuse.
Yeah, it's not the flowers. This is the folia, which is the foliage.
Oh,
leaves are obtuse.
Oh, flora. I was thinking of flora, like grandiflora.
Yeah, there you go.
The leaves are obtuse.
Yes. Well, fagoosh.
Yes, thank
you. That's a stump of approval.
Casey.
Alex.
Let's imagine, as we do every week,
okay,
that you and I... oh, boy. I don't even know where to start. You and I are walking through a place that has these growing in them. And we come across some.
Wow. There they are. Well, Alex, that place you'll be lovely, happy to know, is the gorgeous country of Costa Rica.
Beautiful.
They grow
let's ID this tree. I forgot to say.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, yeah. We're going to go ID this tree in this place.
Yeah.
So there's about 60 or so species in the genus Cecropia.
Okay.
And they are generally... primary species. And so what that means is that if there's a disturbance or someone comes and cuts down all these trees and turns it into a field, the field turns back into a forest, the first trees to come in and kind of climb over the shrubs and the vines are Cecropia.
Oh, is that called like, is it like first generation or something?
Might as well. We use the term primary succession.
Oh, succession. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
So they are the first to succeed the non-forest.
Oh, they're the first ones to grow.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Then you have succession happen after that. Some people say secondary. I don't know if there's ever a primary in that sense, but there's like early succession and late succession are the big terms. So early would be these species.
Speaking of good TV shows...
oh, yeah.
Succession.
Exactly. Now, I want to see late succession, where everyone's big and old and slowly dies while younger things come up in their shadows.
Yeah.
That's good television.
Yeah, man.
So this is Cecropia obtusifolia. It is native mostly to the whole kind of central and very northern South America.
Okay.
Central America, Northern South America. And there are plenty of other species that grow all through what the term is the Neotropics, which is essentially the new tropics, which are the tropics of South America.
Why is that called that?
You know the term Old World?
Mm-hmm.
That is in reference to Europe, Asia, Africa.
Yeah.
The New World, Neo, is the Americas.
Okay.
So the neotropics are the new tropics, South America. The old tropics, which I don't know if there's a term for it, is the tropics of Southeast Asia and Africa.
Okay.
And kind of, you know, southern India, kind of that whole area. Any place that's tropical, connected to essentially what's between and south of China and anywhere in Central Africa.
So is neotropics, that's a term framed in like colonialism?
Well, it's more just a term framed with the center of the world in the sort of European, Central African, Mediterranean kind of region.
Okay.
You know, if you look at a map of the world, if you put your finger in the middle, it's essentially like Northern Africa.
Yeah.
That is saying that here is the old world, everything that existed. And then we found this new world, which is the Americas, you know, Australia, things like that.
Okay.
So when you say neotropics, that would be the South American tropics, okay, the new world tropics.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so they were
growing at the same time as old world tropics.
Oh yeah, and there's been people there for, you know, thousands of years.
Yeah.
And the plants have been there growing for however long.
I don't know why I'm bumping up against that so hard, but it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it's somewhat colonial. I think it has a base certainly in colonialism.
Yeah.
But more it's a center of focus on a certain part of the world.
Okay.
And then if you're gonna give labels to things, because if you just say the tropics, that's the entire band of the world,
right,
in this, you know, between the tropics of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn.
So it's a mostly harmless way of differentiating the tropics of Africa and Southeast Asia to the tropics of South America.
I think that's reasonable, but yeah, it does have these connotations.
Yeah.
You're exactly right.
Okay.
So I think it's fair to bump up against it. But essentially, we'll just say it's the tropics of Central and South America.
Got it.
That's where these trees grow. And they grow in, they're evergreen, of course, as most tropical plants are, because there's no reason for them to drop their leaves. They grow in disturbed areas, so you can find a lot of cool pictures of them. If you just look up Cecropia, they're very, very common. And they'll pop up and be this one long, big stem coming out from an otherwise like very disturbed area. So they're very common to see. If you see anything in an urban area, a lot of times they would be this tree because they can just grow in and kind of take over in a spot that otherwise other plants aren't really happy with.
Are they considered to be invasive?
Yeah, they are invasive in some places, yeah. So they're only invasive wherever they're outside their normal habitat. So, for instance, they're an introduced species into Hawaii and some other places in Africa and other tropical places.
Okay.
So I don't know if they are really super invasive, but I think probably because they're known to be this pioneer species. So they invade these areas that otherwise are not forest. Whether they used to be, whether they never were, this tree is specialized in taking and growing in those places. So it leads me to believe I bet you they are invasive.
You know what, that I always have this image when I think of invasive, especially these primary successional invasive species.
Yeah.
I think of the sardines in SpongeBob.
Okay.
Do you remember this episode?
No, I never watched SpongeBob.
Sardines come to the Krusty Krab.
Okay.
And they're just like, they make a little meep, 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 meep noise.
Yeah.
And they just like, they're just like these kind of drone-like things. They just fill up the entire place.
And I was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
This, I think it might be kind of like that. Yeah.
That'll make a few people happy that I made that reference.
Some people be like, I get it. I understand it now. This is why you play a very important role. When everyone else is like, what exactly is Casey talking about? And you're like, it's like SpongeBob. And it was like, oh, yeah, okay, perfect. I get it now.
I helped four people understand.
Four more people than me. Okay.
Oh, please.
Yeah. No, we're putting that together. That adds up.
All right.
So as it happens, I noted you can tell this tree because it has this big, long stem, right?
Yeah.
That big, long stem, it's always topped by what everyone calls a candelabra crown.
Oh, cool.
There's a great photo, and I'll show you right here. It's in our bit, but we'll have a link to this photo. But essentially, there's this big, tall stem. It almost looks like a palm, but it is a tree that has secondary growth.
Yeah.
But it has this big, open canopy that just kind of goes whoop and pops out. But it doesn't get big and capacious like you'd expect, like an oak tree or a jacaranda or something like that.
Yeah.
It stays way smaller, and it keeps its crown kind of on that main stem. Every now and then they'll put out, you know, side branches that come out, but it's usually kind of this pop top on top of this long stem.
Interesting. Is that that's a survival mechanism?
Well, yeah, it's they put all their effort into growing straight up really fast.
Yeah.
And then trying to put their branches up once they get up there.
Yeah.
They don't send a bunch of things out low down. So they can kind of pop up over the tops of these shrubs and things pretty quickly, right, and then create their canopy.
Okay.
Once they're up there, then they can just kind of keep growing.
Interesting.
And they don't get super tall. I think up to 40 feet, 30 feet, somewhere in there.
That's extremely short.
Yeah, it's not too big. And funny enough, a lot of the trees in the tropics don't really get too tall. They just kind of go up, take over this big canopy. And there's some that will be this emergent tree in the old, old forest. It could be up to 150 feet tall. But for the most part, a lot of tropical trees are just good being kind of middle of the road height. They really don't go too crazy.
Hmm.
Now, these leaves, you noted you liked them because they were called obtusifolia.
Yeah. You know, Casey, a couple weeks ago, we were talking about a different tree.
Uh-huh.
We were talking about the umbrella pine.
Yeah.
And I said, they kind of look like marijuana leaves. And you said, what? And I said, yeah. And I looked up the correct photo. I had jumped the gun a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And I had looked at our notes, and I was looking at this tree.
You were.
The tree that I thought, these obtusifolias were what I thought looked like marijuana leaves.
Okay, that actually makes a lot of sense. They really do. I think the big difference being that they are, they don't have like a bottom where a maple leaf, a marijuana leaf, has like a bottom with really small lobes and a stem that comes down.
Yeah.
And then everything comes out over the top of it. Like if you're looking at it, you know, kind of upright.
Yeah.
This, the stem, comes up from the bottom, the petiole of the leaf, comes up from the bottom and then has a palmately lobed leaf that comes out that looks like exactly like an umbrella.
It is quite like a server holding a plate.
Yes, exactly. So imagine if the marijuana leaf went all the way around.
Yeah.
You know, every single lobe is the same length.
The petiole's just on the bottom of the leaf instead of the end of it.
Yeah. So this really does. It makes sense why you would click on this and be like, oh, yeah, totally, umbrella pine. I don't know why they're calling it a pine, but whatever.
It's very umbrella-like.
Makes total sense. Yeah, you know. But those leaves also, they're really like frilly on the side. Each leaflet, rather, comes out and they kind of have this waviness to them. Underneath, it's a really like mint light green.
Ooh, yeah.
And on the top is like this kind of dark limeish green.
Oh, yeah. Now we're talking.
Oh, man. It looks so good. Like when you look at the leaves, they kind of curl up. They're crinkly on the sides and they have this intense kind of contrast between these colors.
Especially like seeing the light come through it. It's sort of iridescent and glowy.
That's you're exactly right.
It's extremely beautiful.
It looks really nice. And they have these big long petioles and they grow from these shoots that come out and they grow slowly, but you know, quickly in terms of like they get started quickly and then they kind of slow down when they get old and then they just kind of keel over and die. They don't last for a whole long. They kind of reproduce quickly, though there are 60 some species and they will grow and get, some will grow really fast, some will grow really slow, some will grow at a drier area, some will grow in a wetter area, some grow in very specific locations, and that changes per exactly where they're at.
You know what I'm curious about, Casey?
Mm-hmm.
And any of our South American or Central American listeners, I know we have a few. I'm wondering if in like this, you know, in the streets of a city in Costa Rica, these grow in the same way that like trees of heaven grow here.
There's
a little sprout of a tree of heaven, you know, like in the crack somewhere.
Honestly, that's a good question.
I would love to hear that from somebody.
Yeah, well, the next time we're down there, we need to take a look and see if we can identify them, because apparently they're easily identifiable. There's not a whole lot of trees that look just like it.
Man, I would love to go to Costa Rica.
Hey, let's go get it done.
All right.
Everyone, we'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary.
First, we stop to watch Xena.
Now we're stopping to go to Costa Rica to find this tree.
These guys need a break.
One of these days, we're going to do that, Alex. We're going to say, well, let's go. And then we're going to have a little fluttery, like, bloop, bloop, bloop.
And like a...
Yeah, exactly. And then we're going to open back up again. You're going to hear, you know, the bugs and the things and the humidity. I think it's going to be fun.
That'd be great. Hey, join the Patreon and make that happen.
Yeah, please. We'll tell you all about it. But, Alex, this is a tree that has a way more interesting anatomy, morphology, specific to its shoots.
Okay.
And those shoots have what is called a prostoma.
Prostoma.
Yeah, are you familiar with stoma or stomata?
Well, I know about stomata.
Yeah.
Stomata are the sort of, we call them stomatal lines or stomatal blooms.
That's exactly.
Little white crusties on the bottom of some needles.
So, yeah, and the stomata are these little holes in that kind of zone.
Okay.
So,
Is that related etymologically to stigmata at all?
I'm not sure.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Good, I don't know. Yeah. It's a good question.
Speaking of holes, little holes.
Look it up. It's exactly what it is, yeah.
Holes in the palms of Jesus' hands.
Oh, is that called stigmata?
I believe so, yeah.
Ooh, it might be, because stoma is a hole. And a prostoma, in this case, is basically a pre-hole. It's a hole that is there to be dug.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
A pre-hole.
Yeah, it's a pre-hole, which is just, you know, not a hole.
Yeah.
But here's what's fascinating.
But it will be.
It will be. Something will make this into a hole. And that is, in fact, Alex, the best way to kind of introduce what we're going to be talking about today.
Okay.
Now, you're familiar with the pith of a shoot, right?
Yeah. I know a pith in terms of orange.
Ah, okay. What is it?
Well, it's just this fibrous sort of white fiber separating the segments of an orange.
And where is it located in that orange?
It's like the cambium. It's in between the skin and the fruit.
Ah, okay. All
right. And down the center of
it. I was saying, okay, down the center
there's
is the
like
really
a little
important
stalk.
Thing.
Yeah.
So in any plant, mostly woody plants,
mm-hmm.
there is what's called a pith, and it is the very central portion of the twig.
Oh.
The new shoot that's coming up. So if you ever cut a log or cut a branch, cut anything, and you can like find that very central point.
Yeah.
That is the pith of that branch.
Okay.
It is that very central, the very first growth. So when a tree is putting up its shoot and it's growing up, it's essentially the first ring, more or less.
Oh, okay.
But the ring has this central section that is kind of nothing. There is sometimes a hollow pith where there's just nothing in it.
Huh.
There's sometimes little chambers in that pith that's kind of blocked up. Bop, 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 bop.
And that's only on secondary growth?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Other plants would just be kind of, they could be hollow, they could be full, but they don't, it's not really technically a pith because the pith is the center of that secondary growth.
Okay.
So correct.
Oh, wait. Oh, okay. Oh, okay. So the heartwood is old pith?
No. The pith remains that very center point.
Okay.
Every single time. So if you are, the new growth is always outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put your finger up and then you put your hand around it, your finger is the pith, your hand is the first ring.
Yeah, I got that. I guess I'm talking about like, is this only on branches or is this in the trunk?
It's in the trunk. It's that very, every shoot is the beginning of a new pith.
Okay.
So every branch has a pith.
And put that on a pillow.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Just let it down.
We need like a TJ Maxx sign that says every shoot is the beginning of a new pith. What did you say?
Every pith is the beginning of a new shoot.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that's going to sell at what, Anthropology and Bed Bath & Beyond. Everyone's going to love that shit.
That candle section of Fred Meyer.
With like the really like flashy writing and then like normal typewriter writing.
Yes.
So you can get it like every pith.
Next to God Bless This Mess.
Yeah, exactly. Ah, I love it. We got to sell those like those little pieces of wood with people writing on it like that with like the funny little sayings.
I'm a big fan, ironically a big fan of those.
Oh, yeah. My mom has one, has had for years that says, "My house was clean last week. Sorry you missed it."
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, it's great.
That's really elevated. That's better than just the word home on the wall.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it's way better.
Oh, my God.
Well, once we make all of our millions from that, we're going to go down and we're going to look closely at these pits. We're going to go to Central America to do it.
Okay.
And you're going to find something unique about these trees and their pits.
Hmm.
as the tree grows, as that shoot elongates, it creates what's called an internode. The internode, I think, have we talked about this before?
Is this anything like the internet, Casey?
It is nothing like it. That one I can totally say is not. This is the in-between node. So internode is the thing in between two nodes.
Okay.
The nodes are where a branch, or rather a leaf and a bud come out.
Yes.
So you have one down here, and then the space, let's say 6 or 5 inches between the next node, that space is called the internode.
Okay.
So that is where the cells and the whole shoot elongates, puts on another bud, pops out a new leaf.
Okay.
Now, each one of those, there is this layer called the sclerenchyma.
Wow.
I love that.
Boy, today's just full of new words.
Oh, my God. It absolutely is. We haven't even touched on it, dude.
Oh, my God.
So the sclerenchyma is essentially this like really hard layer of cells that you can't get through. They're really tough.
Okay.
And they usually go on the outside of the pith as well.
Okay.
So you have this outside and this top. And then one section of it is really, really thin, and that is the prostoma. And the prostoma will be this little indented section that's not thick. And as that pith elongates and dries out, it'll actually split inside and create like this kind of puffy wall layering, you know, like you dig into something that's like this weird foam that you can just like dig your fingers into.
Yeah.
It's really easy. It's kind of like that.
Huh.
And that's the pith that is inside. And there is a species of ant. In fact, there's a whole genus of ant that is specifically trained by evolution to find this prostoma, turn it into a stoma. I don't think that's the technical term, but essentially they find the pre-hole and they dig the hole. They burrow into this pithy chamber.
Uh-huh.
And then this is a founding queen, and this is in a genus of ants called Azteca. The Azteca ant will go into this area, dig this little hole, go into the pith, take some of those that foamy inside stuff, block up the hole, and then chill there. That is a founded colony of the ant Azteca, of an Azteca ant. There are several different species, almost even one species per tree, because they've developed together. And that ant will live in that pith and start its first brood of new worker ants. That ant will live in there. If everything goes successfully, it will dig its way back out, or a worker will dig its way back out of that hole and then go up to where these leaves are at the nodes. Once it gets to the node, it finds its way to these little things called Mullerian bodies. Like Mueller, I-A-N, Mullerian bodies.
What the hell?
This is something we'll also post to, and you can look up. It is these little tiny patches right at the base of the leaf stalk, and they put out these little tiny things called trichomes. This whole plate is called the trichelium, because that's where the trichomes come out. A trichome is essentially a tiny hair-like growth, but this tiny hair-like growth has a little bit of like carbohydrate protein filled chambers in it. And it's essentially taking what is a chloroplast, but instead of having the chloroplast make have chlorophyll in it and make photosynthesis, they take that same thing and they just fill it up with a bunch of that same kind of structure. They fill it up with a bunch of carbohydrates and things, and they push it out into this little growth hair, this little trichome. And then the ants go and eat those little things, and they're called Mullerian bodies.
That's so fucking weird.
Isn't that a wild thing?
It sounds like some like Scientology lore that you've made up.
Oh my God, Alex, it gets so much crazier.
But we can only get so crazy in the first half of the show, Casey. We must take a break.
Everyone buckle up.
We will be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Casey.
Hi, Alex.
You know something about me?
I do.
And you do know this. that I love to be cozy.
Yes, that is very true. Unfortunately, I have to get you out of your bed to do work, you know, because our studio here is small.
Yeah, Casey physically drags me out of bed every morning. And you know what?
Slap a pair of headphones on.
And you know what I'm sleeping on, Casey?
What are you sleeping on today, Alex?
My brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
Oh, Alex, I heard about this.
And you know what I'm sleeping in?
What?
My brand new Cozy Earth jogger set.
Ooh, hold on. Let me get a feel of that. Not your sheet. I'm getting my own sheet.
That's right.
Ooh, this is smooth.
Casey is wrapped in his new Cozy Earth bedding. Now, Casey just returned from Italy.
Just got back.
Land of soft fabrics.
Exactly.
And he has waiting for him products from our brand new sponsor, Cozy Earth. Casey, what do you think?
This is incredible. I don't think I've ever felt something so soft and so, like, I don't know. It feels silky and smooth and it looks beautiful.
It's true, Casey. And you know what? I have been sleeping in my Cozy Earth clothing.
Well, Alex, have you noticed anything about your sleep?
I have been sleeping so well. And here are some things I love about sleeping in my Cozy Earth bedding and my Cozy Earth clothes.
Yeah.
This is no longer officially an ad. This is just me talking.
Hey, everyone just come on in. Just come on in here.
Casey, it is temperature regulating, so I no longer have any problems with getting too warm, getting too cool, having to get up and shut the window, having to get up and open the window, turn the heat on, turn the heat off. I sleep through the night. Soon I'll be eating solid foods. And I have such a good time doing it. Casey, I know you've been traveling, you've been flying, you've been not sleeping in your own bed. I cannot tell you how excited I am for you to try this brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
I cannot tell you how much I agree. Just feeling it, I'm essentially swaddled in a sheet right now, Alex.
That's right,
and
you are.
And I cannot tell you how excited. I'm going to wash this. I'm going to throw it on my bed today.
Hell yeah.
So if you want to be as cozy as Alex and I, then go to CozyEarth.com and after you purchase, enter the promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, to get 35% off. That's huge.
And Casey, how about this? All of Cozy Earth's products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. I don't have that kind of warranty on my tires.
I don't have that kind of warranty on anything.
So go to CozyEarth.com and use promo code TREES for 35% off. Now go and get cozy.
Yeah, you go get cozy now.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-bloomin'. Those people are a-walking around. That sun is a-shining. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates. Sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted. Even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking the Cecropia.
That's right. Obtusifolia.
AKA the trumpet tree.
Mm-hmm, AKA the obtuse tree.
Casey, before the break,
yes,
you set up a very intense line of new terms.
Slot.
And I'm hesitant to jump back in, but I think we should.
Yep, I think we should.
Okay.
This is going to be an interesting topic, and the reason why I think we should. Last week, I think you said this was going to be our ultimate episode of Symbiosis.
That's right. This is our grand finale.
This is our penultimate episode, Alex.
Are you kidding me?
I'm sorry.
Isn't this our fourth?
No, this is our third.
Oh, okay. You did say there were four. So this is act three of a four act play.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And if we want to round it off to a square five, we can do that. But I'll spare you.
Oh my God.
So, this week, and last week, we talked about symbiosis in a way that is extremely mutualistic.
Yeah.
Where
what did we talk about?
There was the Andy and Alder we did the first time. The second week was the umbrella pine.
Uh-huh.
And the umbrella pine, that was a endosymbiosis, where we discussed the idea that chloroplasts
right.
were a different organism that created such a close-knit symbiosis with early cells that they became literally the same thing.
Yeah.
With the Andy and Alder, we talked about the kind of symbiosis that is completely mutually beneficial for either one,
mm-hmm.
the plant and the bacteria, in that case, Frankia and the Alder.
Right.
But they didn't go quite that last step to become the same thing. They were inside of one another, but they were still separate.
Mm.
We've talked way before about the idea of mycorrhizal fungi relationships, where they're completely separate bodies entirely. They only interact where the root and the fungal mycelial network connects.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, they're two separate bodies entirely. They are in the ground. They are fungus and tree, or bacteria and tree.
Yeah.
This time, this is a tree and a completely different organism that is actually in the animal kingdom, which are ants.
Right.
And ants are known to be this incredible group of insects that do almost everything.
Mm.
They've just absolutely blown me away with some of the facts that I've learned about them over the years. And this is probably one of the most incredible feats of symbiosis that I've come across.
Would you say this is a parasitic relationship?
Ah, what a good question, Alex.
Mm.
Not parasitic,
mm-hmm.
but let me explain how this relationship works, and then I want to know if you think it is a symbiosis that is mutual
uh-huh.
for both parties, or if it is just a one lopsided symbiosis.
Let's get into it.
Where only the ants may be actually benefiting.
Okay.
So there's a big debate about this, where is it mutualism or is it just one taking advantage of something the other offers? So the ants themselves grow, and like we talked about at the beginning, they are obligates of these tree species.
Obligates. So,
yes, they cannot survive without this tree.
Okay.
Not any tree, this genus of trees.
Right.
There are many different ants. Some are only able to meet up with certain trees. Sometimes that's because ant A happens to live where tree A grows, and they don't live down where tree B grows because mm-hmm. maybe it's too dry, it's too wet, the tree grows too fast, something like that.
The relationship out of convenience.
Yeah, exactly. But it's also more of a relationship on an evolutionary scale where maybe there is one tree that started to create these certain chambered things, or the ants found this opportunity and mm-hmm. took advantage of it. And then as the tree evolved and started to grow and say, oh, well, this is now a new species that grows over here, and that one has these traits, the ants kind of develop traits along with it, where the ants were like, well, we live a little bit longer before we reproduce and make our next generation. And then that longer term means that they have to stay with a tree that stays alive for a longer period of time. So maybe it's not a tree that grows and dies very quickly. It's a longer-lived tree.
I see.
And then you have ants that will brood very quickly and then have more competition where there are more trees around because they'll put out more new queens to go found new trees, essentially. And almost every tree will have its own colony of ants.
Okay.
In fact, Alex, some trees will have not only one, not two, but maybe up to 20 individual colonies on its different branches.
All of the same species of ant.
Potentially, but also could be multiple species of the Azteca, or it could be other species of ants. And let me just read off some of these other large genre of arboreal ant species.
Okay.
This is a who's who of intense names for the next sci-fi thriller. Namptogenes, Heteropnera, Pachycondyla, Pseudomyrmex, Chromatogaster. That I think is my favorite.
Chromatogaster is definitely a space baron.
Yes. See, I think it sounds to me like a space gun. We're like, Alex, hand me the Chromatogaster. And you toss it over.
No, Casey, it's too powerful.
We can't do it in here. The airlock. So, yeah. So I think you're right. That's why I love these so much.
Wow.
Solenopsis. Fetal. Pheidole.
Wow.
Fetal. Wasmania. Zecryptoceras.
Oh boy.
Procryptoceras.
Okay, my brain's officially melted.
Isn't it great? There's more.
That's a lot of fun.
These are the genre of ants that could be in these trees.
Okay. The genre.
Yes. They're more than these are all genus. Each one of these.
Oh, Azteca is one of those genres.
Precisely.
Okay.
So you have all these different ants that live. Some, rather the Azteca, are obligates to these trees. They have to live in these trees. Their diet consists almost solely of the Mullerian bodies.
Okay.
So those little bits that come out from the base of the petioles. And I should note that these are the base of only the topmost petioles. As soon as there's lower down branches, they stop producing these bodies.
Okay, why?
I don't know. It's a good question. I haven't found anything that explains why they would do that. It might be that the tree just kind of puts it out on the younger topmost thing, and then they just want things to be, maybe the ants, they're like, we don't want you to go down below. We want you to be at the top of the leaves where we have the most of our resources piled. So you guys stay up there.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. That's complete conjecture. I have no clue.
Okay.
However, you tend to find sometimes there are many different genres. Sometimes one Aztec queen and colony will take over an entire tree.
Mm.
One tree, one colony, one species. Other times,
that's
what?
I mean, that just sounded like a tagline for the science fiction movie.
Oh yeah,
one tree, one colony, one species.
Chromatogaster.
Yeah.
Yes, let's do that.
Hell yeah.
We need to hire a fan fiction writer to like write these things like up and make them into actual, you know, films.
Just add that to my workload. Yes. I would love to.
Sounds good. Get typing.
Chromatogaster. What is it?
Honestly, just use that. Chromatogaster.
Chromatogaster.
Yeah. Yeah, scary. One species, one tree, one colony. Coming out fall 2025. So bringing this back to the idea of a symbiosis, This 100% is a symbiotic relationship.
Clearly.
The ants live inside these little pith chambers of the tree.
Yeah.
They eat exclusively these little glycogen-filled cells and like little treats that the tree provides.
Right.
Called the Mullerian bodies. They eat that, and that is all they do.
Here's the next big question. What is the tree getting out of
this? What does the tree get out of this, Alex? That's a great question. So some people will say, well, we've seen these ants actively cutting vines off of the trees.
Oh.
So if there's a vine that kind of gets up there, the ants will chew through the tips of the vines.
Holy shit.
And pull them off, like actually just kill the vine.
Wow.
The vine is probably way tougher and might continue to grow, but they set it back pretty intensely.
Okay.
And people have also observed that they reduce the likelihood of leafcutter ants in the genus Atta, A-T-T-A.
Mm-hmm.
Those ants are the classic leafcutters that you see walking in a line, holding that piece of leaf up, you know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah.
You know, it's a very classic kind of, you see ants in a line
with
those things. Those are leafcutter ants.
Okay. Bugs Life ants.
Yeah, totally. Well, no, I think, isn't a Bugs Life, aren't those more like worker ants? They're collecting grass seed.
Yeah,
I remember that. They always had that big like montage.
Yeah, the big pile of seeds.
Yeah, exactly. Regardless, these ones, they certainly would do that. So the leafcutter ants in the genus Atta are less likely to be herbivorous and cut their leaves and eat them from this species of tree because it has this resident population of ants that will basically fight them.
The Aztecs will go to war.
Exactly, with the Attas.
Wow. That's
exactly right. But it's not all the time. It's just kind of, we see a reduced herbivory. It's not something that they really go crazy for. The ants will, if they see you, they'll be like, hey, get out of here, and they'll have a fight. But they haven't noticed that it's like an intense kind of thing.
Okay.
Because of that intensity isn't there, they're like, well, what really is the tree gaining from this?
Yeah.
If it's already growing so fast and is so good at what it does, where it can get up above those vines and grow perfectly well, it doesn't live for very long already. So maybe the tree is just kind of like, I just don't really care about this.
Sure.
But at the same time, the tree still produces these Mullerian bodies, and they still have developed over time this chamber, which has been a symbiotic relationship that the ants have developed for thousands, probably millions of years.
Mm.
So you're like, well, why? What exactly is the tree getting? It's very clear the ants are you know, getting something really good. So that brings the question down to, is this a mutual symbiosis, or is this a one-sided symbiosis that only is benefiting the ants, one party and not the other?
Mm-hmm.
It's up for questions.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do we have all the information, all the evidence is on the table?
All the evidence, as far as I can tell, is on the table.
All right.
And we know that there are also species of this tree that grow out on like islands that don't have ant species do perfectly well.
Okay.
Because at the island, there's no ants.
This seems like one of those relationships where like one partner goes out of their way to like, to really give to the other partner.
Mm-hmm,
and then once every 3 months, the other partner does the dishes.
Oh.
And the first partner's like, oh, thank you so much. You're awesome.
This is the best.
Yeah. But like, you know, they should be doing the dishes every day.
Yeah. It's like, you're not really doing.
You're not a hero for doing the dishes.
Yeah.
But this partner's so deprived of something in return that doing the dishes feels like a big deal to them.
Yes, exactly. So it's almost like they're conditioned to think like that is what's good.
Yeah.
So are you trying to say that maybe the Cecropia tree, the trumpet tree, is essentially a conditioned partner in this relationship?
I think so. I think the ant is getting a lot more out of it. I mean, it's surviving off this tree.
Surviving 100%.
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of 90 Day Fiancé, Casey. Uh-huh,
okay.
And there are some Ukrainian scammers that are like, the American men will send them like literally hundreds of thousands of dollars over years. And they maybe once in a while get like a picture where they're smiling and they're like, yeah, that's great. You know, like,
man, I got to get in on that.
On the scam?
Yeah. Well, no, I want someone to send me a couple $100,000. I'll send them a picture of me smiling.
Just pretend to be like a beautiful Ukrainian woman.
Well, Alex, every day of my life.
What do you think I'm doing out here?
What do you think I'm doing?
What has this all been about? Yeah, this seems pretty damn one-sided, Casey.
It really does, and it causes this thing whenever I think about symbiosis. I think at the very beginning, we talked about the idea that a friend brought up of, isn't symbiosis, like, isn't the relationship between the fungus and the tree, what do they call it? Mutual parasitism.
Oh, right.
Where you're seeing this symbiotic relationship where the tree is not just a passive, like, hanger out.
Uh-huh.
The tree is actively producing these unique things that the ant eats. They actively have developed over time this unique space for the ants to live. Not every tree does this.
Right.
And that prosoma is a very specific thing that the ants always know to find that's developed in this tree. It's a space that is not near as thick. It doesn't have as much sap in it. So the ant, it's like a predisposed specific spot.
Right.
So you got to think that this tree is getting something, or else why would it have evolved to have those things with the ant? We can give it to the ant, but there's just a preponderance of evidence that tells me that, like, you can't just say it's 100% not one or one way or the other.
Why is she with him?
Yes. What is she getting out of this?
Here's
your TV screen.
I think I have a theory, Casey.
Okay, throw it out here.
And this is so pointless. This is a theory with almost no knowledge behind it.
Okay.
But I feel like maybe, you know, there's always these enzymes in animal saliva. I feel like I hear about enzymes in animal saliva constantly.
Yeah.
Maybe there's an enzyme in the ant saliva,
right?
When it eats the thing, the tree soaks in the enzyme from the saliva, and that helps the tree in some. Maybe it's some microscopic thing that we don't see.
Yeah, that very well could be the case. Okay. There are studies and people out there looking into this.
Yeah.
Because there are people who are way into ants. There are people who are way into trees.
Oh, yeah.
You put those people together, and all of a sudden, you are a myrmecophile.
Myrmecophile?
Yeah, what do you think of that? It's a term I didn't bring up.
Someone who loves mermaids?
Yeah, I believe it literally means the love of ants.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, like if you're an Anglophile, you love English things. Like, it's kind of a thing you're interested in.
Yes.
So myrmecophily is the same thing, where it essentially brings up or is describing a relationship between ants and something else.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, our tree is a myrmecophyte, where it is a ant tree.
Wow.
Yeah, that's exactly what that means.
Cool.
Sorry, last term, I won't bring it up. I won't bring it up anymore.
We better write down these terms and definitions on our website.
Oh, yeah, no, we'll definitely do that.
Okay, so if you want to know what the fuck any of this shit means, go to our website, arbitrarypod.com, look for this episode, and we'll have them listed there.
Yeah, it'll
be like one of those, like, read-along things.
Yeah, where, perfect, yeah. That'll be excellent.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the real thing, and one of our resources, probably one of our biggest, best resources for this talk is from ants.biology.utah.edu. Ant plants are Cropia, Cropia.edu.
That's the only place I go for ant knowledge.
It's the only place I ever go. The University of Utah's got it all.
Yeah.
Well, it's a really, really good resource, and it is just like full of these really interesting, like, facts and tidbits in, like, the scientific way.
Mm.
And they argue maybe the question of mutualism isn't so much is it or isn't it, but when and where is it and isn't it?
Sure.
So we noted that they note in here there's 100 different species. Wikipedia says there is 60 some species. And so I bet you it's probably somewhere in between, but I think they've been moving around a lot in terms of species of Cecropia, because they're also, like, in three different families potentially. So we're just going to stick with more than 60 probably. And there's also all these species of ants, and they're growing in these very specific different areas. And they go into this really deep kind of dive about, well, is the habitat affecting the Aztec ants? Are the ants affecting the Cecropia? Mm. Are the Cecropia affecting the ants? Are the ants and Cecropia affecting the habitat? Like, how are these things all combining? And it's kind of like if you have like a big scale, mm-hmm. and the scale is holding a bunch of ants and a bunch of trees and a bunch of habitat kind of characteristics, that as those like shift and move over, you get more of a mutualistic relationship and more of a succubus relationship.
Right.
And I think it depends on like how hard things are for any one of those things in any given situation. Where if the ants can't live without the tree, they really need to make sure that tree survives. That is the tree winning. And those ants might be more vicious to more other things because if that tree dies, they die. It could be that if it is a really cush environment, the ants are like, hey, thanks, we don't really care, we're just going to go make broods and broods and broods, and we're going to send them out there, and we're going to have a really good time. It's going to be a huge orgy in every one of these nodes. So it could be that there's these, like, you know, such complex factors coming into it.
Yeah.
That we don't really know.
Yeah.
And we can't really put our finger on it at any one point in time. It's like you have to open it up and look at it right there, and all of a sudden you know. It's the Schrodinger's tree of questions.
Interesting.
Yeah, where once you look at it, you can say, okay, this tree, this species, this colony, more mutualistic than not. But this one over here right now in this situation, mm-hmm. with these lights and, you know, this water and this regime, more of a succubus.
So it's basically too complicated to boil down to a simple answer.
I think that's probably where the answer truly lies.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we tried our best.
We did our
Sorry,
best.
Sorry, everyone. Casey, I think this is a great time for a review of the Cecropia. Here's how it works. We give some final thoughts on the tree. Mm-hmm. Give it a rating, 0 to 10, golden cones of sweet, sweet honor. Casey, as our resident necrophyte.
Thank you.
We'll begin with you.
I love ants. I think they're the coolest. I, Alex, think that this tree deserves a good score.
Oh.
I also think it deserves a bad score.
Wow.
I think it doesn't deserve a great score because it's kind of a sellout. It's kind of like you were saying earlier, where like they just wants to do it. You kind of want to be like, you know what, trees, stand up for yourself.
Yeah.
You don't need those ants.
Right.
Those ants are not your friends.
Yeah.
They are taking advantage of you. You can do this.
You bent over backward for millions of years to please
this
ant.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Go join your homies out on the island.
Yeah.
And just be. Just be, you know?
Like Ewan McGregor's The Island.
Exactly. I was thinking more like Luke Skywalker on that planet.
Sure.
Where he just leaves entirely. And
yeah.
Just like, I'm out.
The Irish island.
Yeah, exactly. It was really beautiful. Those little green little bird things.
What were those called? No, they were brown. They were called little penguin.
Yeah, little penguin people. Birds. Yeah, penguin people birds.
PPBs.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we got to take it down a notch for that. Like, it's a tree that is, if it is a mutualistic relationship, 100%, where everyone's winning, then I feel like that tree has signed a deal with the right devil, and it is working.
Wow.
I feel like this tree might have signed a deal with the devil who's a little bit more devilish than the tree signed up for.
Interesting.
Although I love the ants, if we were doing an ant rating, I'd be like, hell yeah. Like, you got the great end of that stick.
Yeah.
Literally speaking.
Unfortunately, that's not allowed, and
we
I have to disqualify any ant ratings.
Any ant ratings are thrown out.
Yeah.
But also, this tree's slightly invasive. It does all these cool things. The flowers, we never even talked about the flowers. They look like little fingers coming out. Like, take a banana, make it really small and warty looking, and then like make it go and kind of dry up a little bit.
No, thank you.
Yeah, it's kind of what it looks like. I think they're great. I think it's fun.
I think they're fun.
They're fun little flowers. So honestly,
that description was so visceral. Wow.
Good. Here, I'm going to show you a picture now, so you get a little bit.
Better idea. Sure.
Yeah, they look just like tiny little things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Little shriveled bananas.
So I think the tree is cool. I like a tree that has a little bit more of status in and of itself.
Sure.
So I know you can see it all the time. I know you don't even need to plant it. I think bigger trees doing cooler stuff that have ants on there, and there are other things that we'll talk about some other time, other ant relationships that I think are way cooler. This one seems a little bit one-sided. I feel bad for the tree, so I think I'm going to give it like a 6.3.
Okay.
Just a 6.3.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it could earn its way up, but I think, yeah, sometimes I just look at it, I'm like, what are you doing with your life?
It needs to break up with the ants.
It needs to break up with the ants, yeah. But, you know, if the ants are so domineering, what are you going to do?
There you go. 6.3, Golden Cones of Honor for the Cecropia from... renowned dendrologist, Casey Clapp.
Myrmecologist.
Mermaid expert, Casey Clapp.
Mermaid expert, Casey Clapp. Their scales. Let me tell you about their scales.
Is this Seinfeld?
Yeah, this is my that's my alter ego, the mermaid myrmetologist.
Mermaids are sort of like the centaurs of the sea.
Yeah, I think that's an easy way to put it. Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's a nice, easy way to put it. All right, Cecropia. I don't love this relationship. Cecropia is the friend.
Yeah.
Who's dating somebody you can't stand.
Oh. Yes.
But, and I'm not saying this for any reason, Casey. I have dated somebody who my friends didn't like. Not currently. Anyway, it's like that friend who's dating somebody you can't stand.
Yeah,
and you want to, they don't treat them that good, and you want to try to convince them to leave them,
uh-huh.
but they just mm-hmm. don't. And they know they should, but they don't. And they know they should, but they don't. This goes on for years,
mm-hmm.
and you finally say, "I can't even hang out with you anymore. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I get ants all over me.
Yeah, I'm itchy all the time, and I don't know." The tree is just doing its best. It's a little codependent. Yeah, it's doing the best it can with the tools it has, Casey.
Yeah.
It's giving a little too much, not receiving so much back. It's a cool-looking tree. I don't know if it's beautiful to me. Mm. Like it. I think the moment I compared it to a tree of heaven,
mm-hmm.
I started to kind of not... I looked Ooh. At it and I was like, oh.
Now I see you differently.
Yeah.
Wow.
Those big compound leaves.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, oh, okay. I get it. Because the tree of heaven has very, you know, if you take away its connotations, it has very beautiful leaves.
It does. In fact, there's a couple trees that I would look at and be like, God, that's a beautiful tree.
Yeah, those pinnately compound.
Mm, gorgeous.
They're not bipinnately compound.
No, just pinnately.
Just pinnately.
Funny enough, these ones of our Cecropia tree are palmately compound.
That's right.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, I'm in the six range too. I'll give it like a 6.1.
Okay. Now, while you're giving this, I'm going to show you a picture of the Mullerian bodies in the ants, and I want to see if this helps or hurts.
Is this not safe for work?
No, it totally is, and you can click on it if you want to look at it in
wow.
high resolution.
So there's the Mullerian body, yep. and it has labeled ant entrance.
Yep, see that little tiny soma now?
Yeah, the ant goes in through a little hole.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And it eats out of the Mullerian bodies,
yeah,
and the trichilium.
Back in its hole, and it hangs out with its brood mama.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
I mean... Yeah, that's really that makes my skin a little itchy to look at. Yeah,
I know.
Honestly.
Once your eyes like adjust and you see all the ants everywhere, you're like, "Whoa, okay."
Yikes!
Does that raise or lower your 6.1 or keep it the same?
It keeps it the same.
Okay, nice. You're solid.
I'm undeterred.
Nothing can change where you're at.
I'm
there's
rock
no
steady.
Amount of yeah. There's no amount of faltering.
No. 6.1 feels good to me.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, boy. Casey, those penguins are called porgs.
Porgs.
That
what
was
what would we do without you?
That's my little tag on the end there. Casey, that was our review, our discussion of the Cecropia. Now, it's time for a game. You texted me yesterday.
I sure did.
And I will say when I read this text, my jaw dropped.
Really?
Out of excitement.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wasn't sure if you're just like, no way. How could he have done that?
No. I was like, whoa, nice.
That's right.
Casey, you have a game.
Everyone, I have a game.
And you have your notebook out.
I do.
What are we playing today, Casey?
Today, we are going to play a game called Ants or Not.
All right.
And essentially, here's how the game works. I'm going to ask you 9 or 10 questions.
Uh-huh.
And I want you to tell me if ants do this.
Oh, shit.
Or if something else does this.
Awesome.
Like, yeah, it could be, it doesn't have to be anything specific. You don't have to guess what the thing that does do it if
yeah,
you don't
yeah.
think it's ants. Yeah, I just want you to say ants They're not ants.
I'll certainly take a stab if it's not ants.
All right, we're gonna try and
I can't say that word.
We're gonna try and do it. We're gonna try and do it fast. I picture this as a kind of a quick round.
I imagine the final round of Family Feud.
Oh, okay.
Name something that's soap. Casey, I'm excited. Should we set a timer here on my phone?
Yeah, we might as well. Let's do 5 minutes. Let's see.
5 minutes.
Yeah, let's see if we can do it in five.
Okay. We're going 5 minutes. Let me know when you're ready. I won't have a ticking clock.
Oh,
rather,
yeah, don't do that.
Whole thing, because that would be very annoying. Casey, should I hit start?
You should hit start.
Ant or not?
Here we go, Alex. Spray poison on neighboring plants to keep theirs beautiful.
Oh, boy. I'm going to say... not ant.
Incorrect. It is ants.
Darn it.
Ants of a couple different species, specifically get into a tree called the Duria hirsuta, and they will create what's called a devil's garden around it.
Oh, wow. That's
killing
some
everything.
Biological allelopathy.
Oh, it is. It's intense. And we will talk about it because they actually say, yeah, this plant uses allelopathy. However, it's not from the plant.
Yeah.
It's from the ants.
Wow.
There you go. There's one.
Outsourced.
Number two.
Okay.
Mimic spiders to live among them and eat them.
This is not ants.
Correct. It's actually the spiders. What are you saying? What were you about to do?
I was going
to
say it was a snake. There's a species of snake.
What?
Whose tail looks like a spider.
No way.
When a bird comes down to try to eat said, quote, spider, the snake lashes out and grabs it.
I want to know about this.
Eats a bird.
Okay, that's sick.
I think it's probably called like the spider tail snake or something.
All right, we're going to look up the spider tail snake.
Yeah.
Well, either way, you got that one right.
Hooray.
For the wrong reason.
Hey, a win's a win.
Hey, 100%. Yeah, yeah. Oh, is it an own goal? I don't care. It's a goal.
An own goal.
There's a specialist group of spiders in the family Zodaridae.
Wow.
And they're called the ant spiders. They live with ants in ant colonies, smell like ants, walk like ants, yet only eat ants.
Oh my God, they're living undercover.
They're totally living undercover.
How stressful.
Yeah, couldn't you imagine just walking around like, yeah, Bill, anyway, it's good to see you again. How long? Bill, oh my God. And Bill just ate you. Everyone's like, Bill, I didn't know you did that, but you smell like, you smell like the old Bill, so that's okay. You're cool to hang around. And then Bill just continually hangs around and eats all these other ants.
It's like the Men in Black aliens.
Yes, it is. Yeah, totally, yeah. It's kind of disgusting.
All right, next one, Case.
Next one. Hoard wild amounts of stuff in their homes.
Uh-huh.
And like hoarders.
I believe this is ants.
This is, in fact, not ants.
Oh.
Ants are extremely tidy.
They
actually have developed their own bathroom spaces.
Are you fucking for real?
Yeah. Ants will go into a certain chamber in their nest, poo there, and then come back out.
That's incredible.
Yeah. They don't have, they don't let things get out of hand. It's very, very tidy.
I read this, I mean, probably like a tweet or something one time. I'm going to pause the timer. That said... If humans, it's purported that if humans went extinct, the next species to kind of rise up and like become the top of the food chain would be ants.
Yeah, you're 100% probably right.
Yeah.
That actually goes very well into our next question, Alex.
Let's hit it.
Succeeded in world domination.
Ants.
Correct. This is ants. There is a species called the Argentine ant that initially was living in Argentina.
Okay.
However, that Argentine ant, a tiny little thing, spread out and kind of popularized their own spaces, but then they would fight amongst themselves as they would kind of almost like tribes of people. They would split and become different peoples and then start fighting amongst themselves like after thousands of years. Well, turns out we took them around on ships to other places where they didn't fight, and they ended up killing off all the other things that weren't like, you know, their other queens that had different genes until it became one single colony, one gene that has been spread from like New Orleans to Japan to New Zealand to India to South America to the Mediterranean.
Wow.
Everywhere in that northern belt and the southern belt that has the same kind of temperatures, the Argentine ant has been there. One colony, one world, one ant. There are billions of individuals, and each Every one queen has about 120 workers.
That's startling.
Yeah. Way more ants than people in this case. They've done it better than we have.
Wow.
All right. Next question. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Mimic butterflies to be raised by them.
Ooh, mimic butterflies to be raised by them. I don't know how an ant would mimic a butterfly. Mm-hmm. That feels like maybe a moth thing. Or something that looks a little bit more like a butterfly that has wings. I know there are winged ants. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say not ants.
That is correct. Ooh. It is, in fact, the butterfly that mimics the ants to be raised by them. This is the Alcon blue butterfly.
This is incredible.
It is an amazing thing. The caterpillar will drop down after eating for a while, and it'll hang on the ground, and it has this big, tough outer coating on it.
Yeah.
And it will put out chemical pheromones that ants will walk by. Specifically, the species Myrmica, that species will walk by and will be like, this is a little buddy from my house. Picks up its little brood and this little larva, walks it down into its house, sets it in with all the other larva, and then starts to feed it, the butterfly larva, more than its own larva in its colony. Then the butterfly will metamorphose, and they'll just be like, what is this weird big thing here? Eh, whatever. And they just leave it alone. The butterfly then will burst out of its cocoon when it's ready and just crawl straight out into the sky and fly away. And the ants will be sitting there looking at this, like, this empty husk and being like, what is this? It smells just like one of our babies.
What?
But they have no idea what it is. They're extremely confused.
That's startling.
Yes. A butterfly larva, a caterpillar will do this, get raised by ants, and then become a butterfly and fly away.
Good for it.
Yeah. And turns out that the ants and the larva are slowly having an arms race to try it. Like, some ants are getting smart to this, so the butterfly will put on a different smell and get a different species of ant to do this for it again. It's insane.
That's fascinating.
Are you ready for your next question?
Yes. By the way, the timer has ended.
Oh, but yeah.
The timer was a... was a macabre charade.
Yeah, it was a little bit of an idealistic idea.
Yeah.
Okay, build the most massive nests on Earth.
The most massive nests on Earth.
Yes.
I want to say, like, an anthill is probably considered a nest.
Yes.
And I've seen some big fucking anthills.
Yeah.
I'm going to say ants.
Incorrect. This time it's termites, in fact.
Oh, bother.
There is a species of termites called Artemides... Artemides meridontalis.
That's amazing.
It is a, they call it the magnetic termites because they make mounds that are up to like 10 or 12 feet
tall.
Yeah,
I've seen these.
Yeah, and they're vertically, or they're angled north-south. And so that when the sun comes from the west, it heats up one side. When it's at the hottest part in the day, it just glances off the side. And then in the later part of the evening, it warms the other side.
That's incredible.
It's incredible. It's one of the most mind-blowing things I've ever seen. And you know, they're like twice as tall as you and me.
I'm not a big fan, sort of like emotionally, of insects.
Yeah.
But they do some pretty fucking mind-boggling things.
Mind-blowing stuff.
I mean, they're smart.
Yeah, these are termites that are smaller than your fingernail.
Yeah.
Insane.
Ooh, I'm itchy, Casey.
All right, next one. This is going to make you less itchy.
All right.
Ingest fungi that alters their mind for fun.
Do ants take shrooms? I'm going to say no, this is not ants, but I feel like I've heard of animals doing this.
Yes, you are correct.
Okay, what
not
animal
ants.
Does this?
You and I, people, it, meaning is what I'm saying, like humans do this.
Yes.
But also you have, there's legends of deer doing this, eating the fly agaric and getting a little silly in the early springs up in the north, you know what I mean? That's the, it goes with the idea of reindeer flying. A, they're a little silly, but people also ate them and saw reindeer and be like, whoa, man.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Is that real?
Yeah, it's all that legend with like the flying reindeer in the north.
Mm-hmm. Santa Claus.
Yeah, exactly. Santa Claus is just a mushroom trip. There are species of ants that eat fungi, the leaf cutters we talked about earlier.
Oh, sure.
They don't eat the leaves, Alex. They take them down, chew them up, and then put them into a little tiny chamber that then grows little mushrooms.
Huh.
They eat the fungi exclusively. There Amazing. You go. All right. There's also another fungus that's called cordyceps that gets into ants, and it makes them crawl up to the top of something, die, and then pops out this mushroom from their head.
I've seen this.
It's insane. That's it's really so insane.
Freaky.
Yeah, definitely not fun.
Have you seen the movie Annihilation, I think it's called?
No, I haven't.
It's with Natalie Portman and Oscar Isaac, and they play like scientists.
Okay.
And this there's been this like alien invasion, but it's like a fungal alien.
Oh, okay.
And so it like turns animals into these crazy fucking weird mushroom monsters.
I want to watch this.
It looks really cool. Right, and I've heard it's very clever and good.
Well, it has to be with those two actors. I love them.
And there's like an alligator that's made of like fungal spores, and it looks fucking nightmarish.
I'm into this. All right, let's do a watch-a-thon.
Oh, that'd be great.
All right, you ready for your next?
I'm ready.
We have a few more. Blindly follow their leaders.
No, I don't believe that ants do. Well, no, I don't believe ants do this.
It is, in fact, ants. There are there's a species called driver ants. Okay. They are blind. They
literally
they blindly follow where another ant has gone. They lay down chemical trails, just pheromones as they walk. So they basically go like, oh, someone walked over here. I'm going over there. And then they lay down that trail. Then another one does it. Then another one does it. So it gets stronger and stronger with no technical leader. But they all just kind of walk around until they see something. And then when they see something, another one walks over and sees that. And then they lay that second trail. They lay that second trail until the trail is taking the entire colony of thousands upon thousands upon thousands of ants crawling around to do this. They're called driver ants.
Driver ants. All right.
Insane. Blindly follow their leaders. Other animals also do that.
Reminds me of another animal. Homo sapien.
Ever heard of them? Anyway. All right, next question, Alex. Are you ready?
I'm ready, Casey.
Overwhelm their enemies with pure numbers.
I mean, ants?
False. It is ants, but they also use poison.
That's not false.
It's totally false. They overwhelm you with numbers, but sometimes they're like, we don't have a whole lot, but we're going to sting you in your mouth.
Oh, God. Next question.
All right. Practice sabotage with neighboring clans.
Practice sabotage with neighboring clans.
Yeah.
I feel like that is ants.
Certainly is ants. There's a species of ants that grow in a desert. I can't recall which one. One hunts by day for seeds. The other hunts by night for seeds. Sometimes the night ants will come out and find the holes of the day ants, take all of their seeds or take all of these little stones and just cover up their holes. So then when the night or in the day ants try to come out, they're like, whoa, they've been completely barricaded in.
Whoa.
So they have to dig their way out. They can't get as many seeds before the night comes again. Then the night ants come out and they're like, woo, and they take over and they grab a bunch. Yeah. Talk about intensity.
That is an HBO plot line waiting to happen.
Absolutely it is. All these are HBO plot lines.
Man, like, ants are fucking hardcore.
They're so insane. Wow. Well, Alex, that does it for ants or not ants.
That was great, Casey.
You did a very good job.
I had a very good time. Thank you for putting that together.
Yeah, absolutely.
A game master indeed.
Well, we'll have. I'll put for most of these. I don't have a lot of them, or I don't have. I think the last three. But I'll show you. I'll point to each individual ant species that does this or does not do this.
Yeah, we'll put those on our website.
Yeah, it's gonna be there
under this episode. Casey,
go check it out.
It's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A.
All right.
And you know what? Yet again, this week's question is from the Patreon.
I love this.
Okay, what do we love got? The Patreon. I love our patrons. We have, is it too soon to do this, Casey?
I don't think so.
Let's tease a little bit. We have some exciting Patreon news coming up.
We sure do, you guys.
And it's not like, hey, a new episode. That's great.
We do have a new episode, though, coming out on Monday, I think.
Yeah, we got new episodes every other week.
All the time.
And it's not like a new perk, right?
Yeah. There are those too.
There are those too. We are in the process of completely revamping, revitalizing, re-energizing one colony.
Our Patreon.
One world.
One Patreon.
One species. One Patreon.
Alex, you're 100% right.
Yeah, this the Patreon is going to get really fucking cool here in a minute.
We're adding new tiers. We're adding new perks to old tiers.
Yeah.
And we are creating some fun stuff for new interactions, new ways to get old stuff, new old ways to get new stuff. And essentially, keep an ear out. We're going to probably end up putting this out maybe by the end of September, maybe in the middle of September. Maybe as early as we get it done.
Yeah, I think we're going to get it done and release it.
Yeah, but it's going to be exciting. If you want stickers, we got stickers. If you want to have live chats with Alex and
wow.
I, we're going to have live chats with Alex and I. If you want old stickers that you perhaps didn't get because you just heard about the show, you signed up, and you're like, wow, there's a bunch of other cool stickers. How do I get those? You have an opportunity coming.
Yeah.
If you want to ask questions and get those questions 100% answered, you're going to have an opportunity for that. It'll all be through the Patreon. We also have a bunch of little incentives. We have offers coming through, deals off. You have exclusive content. There's also exclusive access to some certain things. All this is coming down the line.
Yeah, and we'll give an in-depth breakdown when we launch it.
Exactly.
But we'll just call this the Arbitrary Patreon 2.0.
Oh, my God.
That's always cool.
Yeah, it feels really good.
This
you guys are going to like it.
Arbitrary Infinity.
Exactly. Wow, it just keeps going.
Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. This week's question is from the Patreon, as I said.
Okay.
From Paul Colvin.
Hey, Paul. Good to see you.
Hello, Paul. Paul asks, I have a question about Paulination.
Oh, nice one.
You would.
Did he spell it Paulination?
No, that was just sort of my inflection.
Ah, nice. It was very good.
I mostly think about this in wind pollination, but in pollination in general, how can the trees decipher between pollen grains of different species?
Oh.
I know in general, their, quote, pollen receptors just won't acknowledge it as a viable pollen.
Yeah.
But what, on a cellular level, happens when a foreign pollen enters to reject it, and also what chemically happens when the correct pollen makes its way into the correct tree?
Ooh.
Your humble fungal mycorrhizae, Paul. Casey, pollen question.
This is an extremely good question. It's a little bit in depth.
This is what happens when I choose the question and I don't know.
Yeah, it's a little bit rough.
This is some rough. Some microbiology, yes.
Yeah. So essentially what happens is pollen will land on it's essentially the gametophyte. I'm sorry, maybe it's the sporophyte phase. The sporophyte phase.
What is pollen, first of all?
Pollen is a tiny little minuscule speck
uh-huh.
that is analogous to sperm in,
okay.
in humans or in animals. They would have sperm.
Okay.
Which is most animals. It is this tiny little grain, they call it, and it's at a cellular level, this production, which is a gamete. It is a the gametophyte phase. So I have that down correctly now.
Mm-hmm.
In the theory of alternation of generations, you have gametophyte phases and you have sporophyte phases.
Right.
Gametophyte phases, they can produce gametes. The sporophyte phase produces spores or produces the things that produce the gametes. So there's like these two different things.
We've talked about ferns before.
Yeah, exactly.
And how they're kind of a good example of this process.
Right, because they have like the big fern that you see, and then they have this other almost like sheath-like lichen thing that grows up and produces the other kind of spore.
Yeah.
So they produce two different kinds of spores, one through mitosis, one through meiosis. One being that it splits the genes like a zipper, and now they have haploids cells, which are just half the genes. They have to find another half of the gene to connect themselves with, and then they have another full set of genes. And then there's meiosis, where they just split, but you have two copies of each, where you have basically a clone of a cell.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's a lot. So in angiosperms, for example, the gametophyte phase is the pollen grain. The pollen grain will find the correct receptor, which there's certain receptors. It's almost like proteins in your body where you have a receptor that will, it has to match perfectly like a lock and a key in order for that thing to go in and then germinate.
Okay.
So what happens is that pollen will actually germinate, and when it germinates, it will send a pollen tube that grows down into the ovum of the plant, goes into the ovary.
This all this shit must be so small.
Oh, it's minuscule. It's you can't see it without like electron microscope kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah. Wow.
But it literally is this tube that grows down and then sends a little cell's worth of packet of DNA to the other ovum, to the receiving gametophyte that's another haploid that's inside the egg in the plant.
Okay.
Then those two connect. They take their two haploids and they put those together and they become a full set of genes and chromosomes and everything. And then now you have the sporophyte phase. Now, instead of doing mitosis where they both split into halves, they do meiosis where they split boop, one, two, and now you have two of the same sets of genes in two now individual cells. I think I have that right. I'm not looking this up.
I'm sure you do, but
I might be switching meiosis and mitosis, but don't quote me. Well, essentially, that's what happens, where you have this this carpal. In gymnosperms, for example, it's a little bit different, where you have like this, there's no pollen tube that comes out. There's just this pollen grain that lands on the cell. They connect, boom, they're done. That's it.
So when a species of pollen lands on a tree or on a receptor that is not of that species,
yeah,
it just doesn't fit.
It doesn't fit. It doesn't germinate.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
It just gets kicked off or something?
Pretty much, yeah.
Sits there and dies.
Yeah, and every now and then that does happen. That's when you get hybrids where it's just close enough that it does germinate and it does create this other set of genes.
Okay.
So sometimes that does happen, but it's complicated at a cellular level like that. But mostly you can imagine this little tube growing through down the stigma of the receptor plant.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a little bit complicated.
Woof.
There are some great resources out there that answer this question better than me. Honestly, Wikipedia is a great spot. I've researched and just went back to Wikipedia because they say it so easily described.
Yeah.
So I always recommend that. But of course, you don't want to listen to a podcast just to get a Wikipedia answer. That's no fun. But you could go down also a click hole of reading about all the things like, oh, the alternation of generation. Click on that. Gametophyte, sporophyte. Oh my God. And you just keep going down and down and down.
Right. Like, and all that stuff gives you context. I always think it's good to like research the stuff around what you're researching.
Exactly. Which is why it's also nice to go to the resources page or to just not click on Wikipedia, because there's a lot of microbiologists out there and botanists who say, oh, this is exactly how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also websites that are from colleges that have done a really good job explaining this, like at the level of, hey, you're in Bio 202. We have to explain how this process works at a molecular level. And then they create this really easy to read graphic or video or something like that.
There you have it.
Yeah. But it's extremely like mind-blowing when you talk about the fact that the pollen grain is technically like a gametophyte. It's a different fucking thing entirely.
Mm.
I can't even get into it.
Well, there you have it. Thank you, Paul. If you have a question about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. It's ARBORTRAY pod. Or join the Patreon. This is a great way to get your questions answered. More on that next month,
yes,
when we release the news, the huge news.
Yeah.
We should have a leak. We should plan a leak, Casey.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Leaks are hot right now.
Like some document that no one knows.
Yeah.
And they're like, wait a second. Were we supposed to see this?
It's like mostly redacted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you know that someone's like, well, we don't want to give away too much information.
Join us on our Patreon.
We'll let our intern accidentally send before it should have been done.
Patreon.com/arbitrarypod. Join the Arboretum for $5 a month and get 2 bonus episodes every month on other related topics and trees. Or join the Cone of the Month Club to get a unique die-cut cone sticker sent to you every month in your mailbox.
It's extremely cool.
It is very cool, baby. Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to be like, if you join right now, we'll give you an extra high five when we do all these changes. But I think that's, I don't know if we can.
Yeah. If you're on the fence about joining the Patreon, this upcoming news may convince you.
I think it should. Also, yeah, the cone that's coming out. Oh, my God.
Oh, Casey. This month.
Yeah.
Is the Bunya.
Oh, it's so cool.
The Bunya cone.
It's so cool.
It is gorgeous. I'm gonna post about, or I have posted about that already. Go to Instagram to see it. It's very sparkly,
yep,
and precious and beautiful. put it on a water bottle, as Casey has.
Yes, I love it.
Casey.
Alex, great great job. I hope that you are inspired after this.
You know, I'm actually, you've ignited a little bit of a curiosity in me.
Oh.
Regarding ants.
This is very curious.
I think they're creepy crawly.
They are. That's for sure.
They're spooky wooky.
Yep.
But they seem to do some pretty remarkable stuff, so I'm interested.
Yeah, that is for sure. Yeah, 100% right.
Yeah. Well, hey, our conclusion to our symbiotic...
Uh-huh.
I'm going to call this a odyssey.
Yeah, I think it's a good term.
Yeah, is next week. We will see you then. Thank you so much for listening to Completely Arbitrary. See you next time.
Bye-bye. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.